Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Pop morning, everyone, and welcome to Popcorn Culture. As always, I'm your one true host, Big Jelly, a.k.a. Jazzy J, joined as usual by my brother, the one true co-host, Buzzy Benjamin B. Ben, how are you feeling today?
I am so good.
Yeah,
I am
good. Are you a little tired?
Well, we did. Yes.
Yeah.
I am a little bit tired. Mm-hmm. I am lagged by jets.
Lagged by jet.
Right. Yeah. So in the tail end of last week's episode, we left the little kernels with just the mightiest of cliffhangers. We went through a whole episode. We covered all of our topics, and we were like, I guess that means we'll have to wait until next week to talk about Japan.
But Ben, has it been a week since that last week? Because since then, since our last recording, we have flown all the way to Japan and back.
And back. There and back again. A brother's tale.
Yes.
So it was, we had the very unique opportunity. We found out about it, I believe, on like April 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
We had somewhere in the proximity of exactly 16 days from the first word of notice that we had been invited to Star Wars Celebration in Tokyo, Japan.
Tokyo
2025. And it was just one of these, like, I mean, we have it all the time where, like, extraordinary things have happened since we've been doing what we do for a living. And so often you and I look at each other and we're like, is this the coolest thing that has happened yet?
Yeah.
There have been some amazingly cool things, and I don't even know where this lands on that list, but it's certainly up there. But yeah, so we got the invitation, and you know, we kind of like looked at each other, and like there's so much going through my mind. I don't know about you all at once, because like I'm looking at it and part of me is like, this can't be real. It looks real, and this is like a real place that's inviting us, and I know that. And this event is in fact happening, and it is in Japan, but like in my mind, I was like convinced that it was like a ploy, you know, like I was like, it couldn't be the case that we could just be going to Japan.
Yeah, like what's the catch?
2 weeks.
What's
the
catch?
And the big issue of several concerns from the get-go was that like we have spent some time away from our families this year with, you know, going on tour. We have another,
yeah,
you know, well. Yeah, we'll get to that.
No.
There will be other time away from home later this year. So we're in this in-between zone, though, where we weren't traveling for work. We were just going to be home. And then this invite pops up, and it's like, okay, how are Beth and Alice going to respond to this?
I know. Be like, guys, we just got invited. Because the other thing, it's like, wait, are you saying you got invited to Japan and that you were going to be like brought out there and you were considering not going? And it's like, well, like the other part of it was that like we would, what the trip would entail would be like the 13-14 hour flight out there.
Yes.
On one day. Which then would land you in tomorrow.
Right.
You know, so you like leave on Thursday, but because of like the time difference, you land there like at 2 o'clock on Friday.
Yes.
So you effectively have like already lost a full day. It's not like you left on Thursday and it's like, okay, but you get there Thursday and then you've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You get there like Friday afternoon and then you'd have like Friday evening effectively and then Saturday, Sunday, and then fly home
on Monday.
So it'd be like, are you gonna like you'll be gone from our homes for 5 days, but you'll only actually be in Japan for like two full days. So like, yes. Is that really worth it?
Worth, you know, upwards of 26 to 30 hours of flight time.
Right.
You know, so it's like, you're talking about like one full day plus just spent in an airplane.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to consider. And the other big problem that I had was that I didn't have my passport.
Yeah.
So I did my study abroad in 2011 when I went to Australia.
Yeah.
And so then back in 2021, my passport expired, but we were still like amidst the pandemic. And I was like, well, international travel, probably not on my agenda for a minute.
Yeah.
So like, I think it just sort of like skated right on by. And at the time I didn't really think twice about it. It was just like, I don't really need a passport right now. But then, you know, sure enough, obviously things have kicked back into gear since then. We just haven't done any international travel, or nothing that specifically required a passport for me. Like we did the Disney cruise, which was like technically out of the country.
Right.
And I went to Puerto Rico, which is like, you know, it's like, because it's a United States, not province,
territory.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. I was like, province. That's not the right word. I'm going to do that a lot today, 'cause my brain is so gummy.
Ugh.
But yeah, I didn't need my passport for that either. So anyway, then I'm in this bind where you've got yours, but yours expires in like no time.
Yeah. I was almost in this situation too, because, like I got my passport to go on my honeymoon back in 2015.
Right.
When we were going to Mexico. And so it's like 2015. Okay. So it expires in 10 years. So I got married in June. So I probably got the passport a little bit before June, and now it's 10 years later and it's a little bit before June.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So this trip was like April 17th to 21st, and my passport expires on May 12th.
Yes.
It was right under the wire.
Well, and I'll tell you what, like, I didn't know what to do, because like, I'm talking to a couple people and they're like, well, it's going to take you like weeks, if not months, to get your passport. And then one person's like, well, I think you can like contact like your senator, and like sometimes they can like fast track you. So I did that. I reached out to Senator Mark Warner's like office, and I was like, I have international travel. Is there like anything you can do for me? And dude, to their credit, they were great.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I could not believe it. They were like, absolutely, we'll get this taken care of. Like, you know, are you comfortable driving like to and from DC to get it? And yeah. I was like, absolutely.
I can
do that. That's like a 4-hour drive for me. So I was like, I can make that part happen. And they were like, then no problem. We will get you an appointment at the passport office and we'll get you turned around and we'll make it happen. And like, they were wonderful. Like they were like calling me to follow up and like make sure everything like went well. And I was like, wow, you guys are like, I don't know what I've thought. Like people say like, write to your Congress people or write to your senators, like let them know what you want. And I was always like, yeah, but they're not going to see it.
Yeah.
And I was like,
they're not going to do anything about it.
I have like a total renewed faith for what it means to reach out to your people. Like,
right.
Like there's someone listening. So that was really cool. It felt very reassuring in a weird way, that didn't work. So then I had to spend, in addition to now knowing that we're going to be like on like a little bit of a tight timeline, as we always are when we're doing travel and we're going to be away from work, I also had to spend a whole day driving to and from DC.
Yeah.
Specifically to get my passport. So, but it worked. I got that. Then we were basically sailing off to Tokyo.
Yes, we were a go. So yeah, when we told Beth and Alice about it, their reactions were both like, you have to go. Like how often
support.
Do you get just sent to Japan like that, just, you know, and for a Star Wars thing.
I know. Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
Okay.
It's like, this is like something we would be so excited for.
Yeah.
So we get it all squared away. We get all of our travel lined up. We make all the arrangements. We get all of our videos shot in advance. So we're able to take off and start making our, I think it was a total of 16 hours the first day of travel to get from Roanoke, Virginia, all the way to Tokyo, Japan. And then we land there the evening of Friday, and we are proper pooped. I mean,
absolutely.
I don't know how you felt about the long haul flight. I mean, it's an experience.
It was an experience, and like, we travel all the time, and the act of traveling is never that like nerve wracking for me at all.
Right.
But this was just like, it was so far away. I mean, we were about as far away as you can possibly be from our actual like homes, you know, on the literal other side of the earth.
Yes.
And it's certainly the furthest away I've ever been from anywhere, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of like what a really good comparison would be. Like, it almost reminds me of like when you start being able to like swim underwater and you're trying to see if you can like swim to the bottom of like the deep end.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost like you're like, how far down am I willing to go before I start to worry that like I've gone too far and won't be able to like make it all the way back up or something.
Right.
Like how far am I comfortable being from like the safety of what I know is safe. And not to say that I had any concerns about Japan as like a destination. It was just being physically so far away was like something that was like really impacting me in a way that I didn't fully expect.
Yeah.
You know, like like compared to like tour, it was not nearly as long away from like our homes, but like this one, I felt a lot more. Like when we landed, I was like, I am so far away from my family right now that like,
right.
that is like, that makes me really nervous. And I felt like even like going into the trip, I kept telling Alice, I was like, I feel like I can't see past the trip. Like I can't, there's so many unknowns that I'm about to like go and weave between,
yeah,
that like I can't really think about what life is going to be like 5 days from now, which I don't normally struggle with at all,
right?
You know, and it's like, okay, yeah, like now this is going to be quite the journey. But
I think the other part of it was that it was such a fast turnaround that it felt like the act of traveling itself was also like a huge aspect of it.
Yeah.
It like, you know, if you were going to be there for like 2 weeks, then it would be like, yes, the traveling is a part of it, but that is a small part of it compared to your actual time there. But on this particular occasion, the traveling was a, like the act of like being in the plane was a huge time of the trip.
It was, know? Yeah. And you know, so you're dealing with jet lag, which always happens no matter what. Like, you know, we flew to London several years ago and I remember how jet lagged we were on that particular trip. And that was like a, you know, 6 hour flight or
six
something
hour
like
flight.
That.
Yeah.
This is a 13 hour time difference from what we're used to. So, I mean, you're literally taking your days and flipping them upside down completely.
Yep.
So even that is like something where you're kind of like, well, we're going to get there and almost need like a day just to like get used to the new sunrise.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have a day.
we didn't have a day. Yeah. We had to go.
Had to go.
So it was really fun though. I got to do a lot of, I got to consume a ton of movies.
Yeah. Which, like on the plane.
On the plane. Yeah. Which was something that I was really excited about. Like I find oftentimes, and I don't know what it is. Like if Alice and I sit down at night to like watch a TV show, it would not be uncommon for us to watch 2 hours, like 2 hour long episodes or, you know, something like that, like 3 30-minute episodes. Like
right.
What could theoretically be the length of a movie.
Right.
But the bite-sized pieces of doing the TV shows makes it always kind of feel like, well, you can sort of stop at any time. Or even if you stop like midway through an episode, it's like you're watching like such like a big story that it's like, oh, we'll pick it back up tomorrow.
Right.
Like, I can do that. But I feel like I have this like hesitation about like stopping a movie like an hour and 12 minutes in and being like, yeah, we'll watch the second half tomorrow night.
Right.
Like that seems like strange.
I know what you mean. Like I'm going to lose the rhythm, you know?
Right. But so then when I was on the plane, you got like the little like media consoles things that are there that you can like watch movies on. And so I watched eight movies.
Wow.
Yeah. So here's my list.
Okay.
I don't have to go into all of them, but I watched Wolfs, which is like a Brad Pitt, George Clooney movie that I could only describe as being like the Ocean's 11 meets Superbad meets The Hangover. really odd. A Real Pain with Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin, which Kieran just won the Academy Award for, which was amazing, by the way. It was like two cousins traveling on a Holocaust like trip to Poland. Wild Robot, the animated movie. I was really excited to watch that one.
Mm-hmm.
That was really fun. Deadpool versus Wolverine, which I had technically seen before, but you know, guilty pleasure.
Right. Yeah. Super good.
Gladiator 2. That was a good time. A Complete Unknown about Bob Dylan. Like one of those names that like I feel like I should know so much more about who this person is.
Yeah.
And then upon learning more about who it is, I was like, wow. Like, to not know is almost like it would be like our grandkids not knowing anything about like Taylor Swift, you
right.
know.
Oh,
like
right.
it's like this person is like a literal human phenomenon. Like it's crazy. And I was like, wow, okay, well, there you go. I know a lot more about Bob Dylan now.
All right, cool. Good for you.
I watched Mufasa. At long last, which I thought was kind of predictable, honestly. and Twisters, which I think it was just like, it's just like a good, fun popcorn movie. Yeah, so good times. That was my lineup.
How about your lineup? Okay.
How about you? What'd you take in?
Let's see. So right away, as soon as I turned on the little media console thing, the very first thing was like, Wicked! And I was like, awesome. Let's do it.
I haven't
seen it since theaters except for on Broadway, but you know what? I'm gonna watch it again right now. I didn't even look at the other movies. I just went straight for it.
Still just as good.
It's better on the big screen, but you know, very fun.
Yeah.
I was still laughing. It's like one of those things where you're like, oh man, the person next to me is gonna be like, what are you laughing at? What's so funny?
Right, yeah. Yes.
Although the person next to me was actually this like adorable old lady who was crocheting things the entire flight, and she made a octopus for the little boy sitting behind us, and then she made another one and handed it to me because she'd seen a picture of Luke pop up on my phone. She was like, I was thinking you'd give this to your little boy, and then the picture of him was like when he was two and now he's like seven. So
yeah. Oh, yeah,
and then sure, I was sure. Like, also I've got two other ones, so if I just come home with one, probably not gonna be good, but I can't, you know, say could you make me two more or just not accept it at all.
Are you taking requests?
Yeah.
You actually gave it very, very generously, gave it to me to give to Addison.
Exactly.
I gave it to this morning, and who was over the moon about.
So good.
Thank you to you and this nice old lady on the plane.
Yes. Although this happened to me though. Okay. So you know, like when you're on a plane and a lot of times you like look over and see what the other people are watching. Like what are these people interested in? Right. What did they land on, you know?
Right.
So obviously whilst I was watching Wicked, my neighbor noticed that I was watching Wicked.
Okay.
And she'd been watching something else. But so as we're going on, I see that she finishes her movie and she fires up Wicked herself. And I was like, oh, look at this. She clearly saw me watching it and was like, I want to watch that. And I was like, huh, look at that. I inspired someone to watch a thing.
Kindred spirits.
Like she took my note. But then, Ben, like 5 minutes in, she turned it off. And I was like, oh, wow, savage.
Whoa.
I was like, she was not into it. Okay. All right. She thinks I didn't see that, but I did. And now we're mortal enemies. Thanks for the octopus.
Hey, I was going to say, yeah.
No, she was very nice. I was just like, that is how I felt. I was like, she didn't like it. Oh my God. It's like I silently gave her a recommendation. We exchanged zero words about it, but clearly she saw me watching it, was thinking, wow, that looks interesting. Turned it on and it was not for her. Mm-hmm. Oh no. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, so
anyway,
there's that.
Anyway, I watched Wicked. Then because we were going to Star Wars Celebration, I was like, I wonder if they have Star Wars on this plane. And they did.
Yay!
So I watched A New Hope, you know, to get in the mood.
Naturally, yeah.
It's obviously still amazing. I still love it. And then when it was out in theaters, I didn't get to watch it, but it's the Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim.
Okay. Yep.
Which was like an anime movie of Lord of the Rings, and it takes place like 300 years before the story, before Bilbo gets the ring. So even further before Frodo gets the ring.
So where is the ring with Gollum then?
The ring, is it with Gollum then?
Isn't it 500 years that he has it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. Yeah, Gollum must have it at this point.
Okay.
Kind of off in the caves. But anyway, it sort of tells the story of like how Helm's Deep got its name, and it's kind of like the Two Towers, but just like 300 years before.
Okay.
And there's like a, you know, warrior princess, kind of like Eowyn? Eowyn?
That's
Eowyn? Who's the girl fighter in? I'm watching the movies right now. I got to Japan and I was like, I'm in a pretty Lord of the Rings mood now, despite being here for Star Wars.
And what people are going to hear as the rest of this explanation unfolds, it sounds like you were just as deep into like the world of fandoms as you
pretty
could
much
have been over
oh my
the past
gosh
week.
Yes, I mean, well, yeah, we can talk about that a little bit more. Then I also just watched a bunch of Family Guy because it was just silly and I needed things that I didn't have to pay too hard attention to because I wanted to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Then on the way home I watched Mufasa as well.
Nice. Which, yeah, what'd you think?
You know, it was all right. You know, it was yeah. I mean, you kind of know what's going to happen a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, as soon as you know the character's Mufasa, it's kind of like, well, it's got to be going here somehow.
Yeah.
I felt like the movie went to extraordinary lengths. And I mean, not to extraordinary lengths, but like it was written in such a way that it was like, we need the plot to keep favoring Mufasa, but we have to have it be the case that every single time Mufasa gave Taka the chance, like he always tried to put him first.
Right.
He always, like, you know, so it's like he's always being noble the whole time.
Yes.
He is never at fault.
Right.
And it's almost like one of those things where it's like he's so pure and everything just keeps working out for him.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, all right.
Well, it's like Taka keeps, you're right, but it's not only does Mufasa keep giving Taka the opportunity to like do the thing, but then like Taka sometimes will also just have opportunities on his own to like make a choice to do a thing and like he won't.
He'll like back
or like down. Back or down or like or get scared or something. Yeah. So like, and then, you know, Mufasa just has like all these better ideas or, you know, solutions to problems and they're like very elegant and they work out nicely and
yes.
stuff. So you're like, he's just clearly the born leader that he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
that you expect from him.
Yeah.
And Taka's not. But then the problem is that, you know, Mufasa was adopted into a family after getting washed away from his actual family.
Yes.
Of different lions. And those different lions, in their pride, Taka is, you know, Mufasa's age. And he is the prince. He is the bloodline. But then his parents get wiped out and they're traveling to a new land. I kept thinking Malele, which is where they're trying to go to the whole movie, was going to be a metaphor for, like, heaven. And what his mom actually meant was, like, you know, like when you die, you go to Malele.
Yes.
And that's like the circle of life. And that's, I thought that we're what they were kind of like discover towards the end or whatever. So that it like tied back in, like when Mufasa died, like when Simba sees Mufasa die, it's like, no, it's not that bad because Mufasa went to Malele or whatever.
Yes.
But no, just Pride Rock is Malele.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I was like, oh, I was like, you know what? That could have been a little bit more poetic, but it's fine. It's cool.
It's all good.
It's all good. It's all good. But I also watched Transformers 1, like that animated Transformers movie that came out.
Okay.
And I got to tell you what, it's just Mufasa. But funnier. Give them that.
So you got Megatron and Optimus Prime.
You got Megatron and Optimus Prime. You know what? I'd say they're hanging out. They're like mining bots together.
Okay.
And they're trying to solve some mystery about what happened to their planet, but they're just the best of friends. They're just total best buds.
Of course.
And like every turn, they're so supportive of one another until they start learning the truth. And I got to tell you, one of them does not take it well. Yeah. One of them doesn't take it well. He thinks like, wow, this is not cool, and I'm going to take some vengeance on everyone.
On man,
yeah. Guess who that was?
Yeah. Classic Optimus Prime. The guy can't take a joke.
Guy can't take a joke. So yeah, then there it turns out Optimus Prime and Megatron, they're just like, they're total enemies now. Who saw that coming?
Yeah. Who saw that coming?
Wow. Yeah. Wow, 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 wow. Despite being the best of friends. Then I started watching Juror Number 2.
Okay.
Which was a very interesting, like, I don't always like court movies, but the flight home had far limited selection on movies, and I'd seen other people watching it, and it was Nicholas Holt, and I was like, okay, all right, sure, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
And indeed, it was quite compelling. It's like the guy basically gets selected to be on a jury, and then as the crime is unfolding, he realizes that he was actually involved in the incident in question and did not realize it until he started learning about the case. And so he's like learning in real time that he was involved. And now as a juror, he has to decide whether the guy is innocent or guilty. And of course he knows more than everyone else, but he can't tell everyone because that would incriminate himself.
So
he has a real moral dilemma on his hands.
Okay. Okay. I like it. I like it. Yeah. I like Nicholas Holt too. He's a good actor.
Yes. But as it were, it was at the point of the movie where the judge is about to read the jury's decision, literally opening the letter. And it's like, the verdict is, and the TV shut off because the plane landed. And I was like, oh, wow, that was the worst timing ever. So I don't know what happened. So don't tell me. I got to figure this out still.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that wasn't just going to be the end. There was going to be more. But anyway, so there was that. And then I also watched the Seth Meyers stand-up special, Dad Man Walking, which was just hilarious.
It was really funny. So I watched about like 20 minutes of it because we were like flying in. And I was like, I cannot, I've been on this plane for too long to be bored for 30 minutes. Like I can't sit here and twiddle my thumbs for this last little bit of time. I have to be doing something. So yeah. I watched a little bit of it. I was like, wow, this is so spot on. And it's like, when it comes to parenting, it's like, nobody's living a unique experience. We're all in this together, guys.
We're all together.
it's just so funny how relatable just everything is.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you're a parent, definitely give that one a look, because it is really funny.
Yeah. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Mint Mobile. Do you say data or data? Well, at my house, we say data. Anyway, it doesn't matter. For the long longest time, I just thought that paying a fortune on my monthly data plan was just normal. That wasn't until I found out about Mint Mobile and their premium wireless plans that start at just $15 a month. And the point is that all plans come with high-speed data, or data your choice, and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And y'all, we use Mint Mobile, and as you can imagine, having good connectivity is important for a very, very internet-based company. And as you may know, we've been spending a lot of time on tour lately, which means we've been combing the corners of the United States and haven't missed a beat. Sometimes I just think it's too good to be true, like a nice soft caramel or a pecan pie, or hold on, I got more. The Caribbean beach, sun-dried tomato, high-speed data plan. Oh, wait, hey, it just is that last one. So no matter how you say it, don't overpay for it. Shop data plans at mintmobile.com/poppop. That's mintmobile.com/poppop. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all, if I've said it once, I've said it at least 13 times. I have ideas for businesses every day. Here's one of my latest goodies, a restaurant called Tipless. It's like one of those restaurants where the waiters are kind of rude to you, but instead of writing mean things on your hat and being full of zingers, it's an on-purpose bad dining experience. No matter what you order, they will bring you something else. You might have two spoons and no fork, and don't even think about asking for a ranch on the side. They won't forget, they just won't bring it. Anyway, Jay says he passes on that one, but for every 10 bad ideas, occasionally you will find a good one. And when that day comes, you'll want Shopify. Shopify seriously makes it easy, like brings you an extra side of ranch preemptively easy to get started with your new good business idea. We use Shopify for Carlin Bros Mercantile, and my wife and I use it for her business, Nude. And it's because it's the exact right amount of easy you asked for your eggs to be cooked. That's like an over easy or like over medium joke, or should I say yolk? That's it. I'm opening a comedy club. Y'all, upgrade your business and get the same checkout that we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/poppop.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
But yeah, there you go. That was my flying time in the air to and from Japan. But then, Ben, there was Japan itself.
I know. I was like, people are going to be like, you guys went to Japan and just spent how much time talking
25 minutes talking about getting there.
Talking about the movies you watched on the airplane.
It was quite an experience.
How often do you get to watch 8 movies in the course of like 5 days?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So we land in, in Japan. We go through like all the customs and figuring out like all the things. Jay and I had like a running gag throughout the entire trip where it was like so constantly the case that there was like a form or like a thing, a QR code or something that you were supposed to have that we didn't have,
or we would just misunderstand how it was supposed to work.
Yes, but it seemed like everybody else always knew what they were doing, and it seemed like we were the only ones who always didn't know what we were doing. So that just maintained to be true pretty much the entire time. Yeah, but that's okay. So we land though, and we're both pooped. We're both so exhausted, and we're like, we have to do something. Like it's too early to just go to bed. So we're like, okay, what is something like we know that we can do while we're still just trying to like get used to being here. So we went to the Pokemon Center.
We had to go to the Pokemon Center. Of course we did.
Yeah. It's like, you know, like if you buy like the Pokemon store online is called PokemonCenter.com.
But there's no Pokemon Centers in America, but this is like, it's like stuff from those stores in Japan.
Yes. Yep. So super, super cool to get to go in. They've got this like giant, you know, like Snorlax statue right as you walk in. Mm-hmm. Like these like amazing wall art mural type things
from
going
on. Artwork from all the games throughout the years. And
yep. And then, I mean, just a stuffy of every character you could pretty much think of, except for who was it? Who we couldn't
Scyther.
Find? Scyther.
Yeah, couldn't find Scyther.
Yeah, couldn't find Scyther.
There was Fear. They had Fearow.
They had like Nidoran.
Yeah, they had, you know? They had almost every Pokemon plushie just available almost ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Pretty big wall of that. And then just, you know, if you could think of it as a Pokemon toy, they probably had it. They had stationery and pencils and tons of like card game accessories. And we bought one of the things I always try whenever I go to the tournaments, there's always these particular sleeves that you can only buy in Japan.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like when you buy an Elite Trainer box, it'll always come with sleeves, but those sleeves, and they sometimes will have like cool artwork on the back and stuff.
Right.
But those sleeves are notoriously bad for playing the game with.
Right. Good for like storing your rare collectible cards, bad for playing.
Yes. Like you shuffle them like three times and like, that's it. They've started to like, you know, break apart or like tear or whatever. They are just like, it is just a joke in the community. It's like, why do they even sell these? But then there's these sleeves that you can get in Japan, which also have cool art on the back, but work to play with.
Ugh.
Now, like, because they have artwork on the back, you couldn't play with them in like a standard, like an official, you know, big boy tournament.
Sure.
Because you have to have, you know, solid cover backs or whatever. But for like GLC, they're super fun because that's a much more casual format.
Okay.
So I like to have them for my GLC deck. So I got like three sets of them and I was just like, yes, I get to pick them out in person. I don't have to like pay some upcharge from some vendor who got them and is now like selling them at a crazy price.
Right.
So that was fun. We bought a bunch of Japanese Pokemon cards. They didn't sell any English packs, but you know, it was like, well, we gotta buy. If we're gonna, you know, I don't have any need for Japanese Pokemon cards, but you know, we gotta buy them while we're in Japan.
Gotta do it. It just seemed like an essential part of the experience. Yes.
And then I also made sure to open up my Pokemon Go app, which I haven't opened in like, I don't know, like 6 months. You know, but because we were at a Pokemon Center, I was like, let me update the app real quick, and I feel like it is. Like, it would be a crime not to open it up and spin the Pokestop that is the Pokemon Center in Japan.
Yes, yes.
So I did that and caught a few Pokemon in Japan. That felt like you have to do that.
You gotta do it.
Yeah. So that was pretty good, too. But then we caught our Uber back to the hotel, and Ben fell asleep in the Uber on the way back.
Dude, I was so tired.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, and the thing was, is that the time was so sporadic, like so much was changing, like because it was like over 12 hours that I could not even tell you how long we had been awake. Like, you know, it was like 30 hours
something,
you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know, I mean, it was a while. I did not sleep well on really either flight, which was highly unfortunate and so unlike me. But yeah, then I was in the Uber and I was like, that's it, I'm out.
You're out.
So then sure enough though, the next morning
we should talk about the in our trend of not knowing how things worked or just feeling like we didn't know what was going on was the getting from the Uber drop-off spot to the lobby of the hotel, which was, they drop us off and we're like, all right, we're here. And there's a big sign like, you're at your hotel. Great. But then you walk in these like automatic doors and it's like, oh wait, this isn't the lobby. Oh, okay. We have to go up the escalator to get the lobby. Okay. So we go up this like the world's longest and slowest escalator.
Yeah.
We finally get to the top and there's just doors at the top that lead back outside. And you're like, wait,
No.
Was this whole building just an escalator? And pretty much. But then you walk outside and you have to cross a street and then you're in another building and that's where the lobby is.
Yes. Well, through two different sets.
Yeah, through
like
two different sets of doors.
Automatic doors. Yes. Yeah. So like, yeah. And yeah, I mean, it was, and then like we went to like the check-in process to like get like our rooms and like that had like a hitch.
Yeah.
It was like, oh no, what if we don't have rooms?
Yeah.
You know, cause like other people booked it for us. So it's like, it's not in our names and we don't have the confirmation numbers. And it's like, oh my gosh.
Right.
You know, it's like the whole thing is just like, cause then you're there and you're like, what if this is all like a ruse?
The flights were real. The hotel wasn't.
That's it. Yeah. It's like they got us here. It's like now we're just about to be like tossed into the back of like a cargo van and shipped off somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but that didn't happen.
No, we had our rooms. We got up there. That was good.
Yeah.
So yeah. Then next morning. No. We also got dinner. Did we? Did we get dinner?
We got dinner.
We got dinner. Yeah. At the hotel.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Which was also very interesting because like the spread of food was obviously Japanese. And so like, I think even just kind of getting accustomed to that was kind of fascinating. But like the thing that I thought was really cool is there was like an ice cooler fridge type thing that had sushi in it. And if you know what nigiri is, it's like when you go and you just get like the piece of fish that's sort of like laid over like a little bite of rice. They had maybe it's sashimi.
Sashimi.
It wasn't laid over a piece of rice.
It was just
a fish. But yeah. So like, you know, if you were to go to like any store, I mean, it can cost like, I don't know, like $6 to $8 for like two pieces of this or whatever. They just have a cooler that's just like full of it.
Yeah.
You know, so there's just like pounds of salmon and tuna and whitefish just there.
Yeah.
Like, help yourself.
Help yourself.
And it's like, well, this is crazy.
This is cool.
This is so much sushi.
Yeah.
Just at our fingertips.
Yeah.
So that was really fun.
Yeah, that was really fun.
And so you ended up having sushi for like for dinner and breakfast like twice.
Every time we ate at the hotel, I got sushi. I was like, we're in Japan. I'm eating sushi. If it's there, I'm taking it.
Breakfast sushi, why not? Yeah,
breakfast sushi, why not? You know what? There, people were having breakfast salads, you know?
People were having breakfast salads. People were having like breakfast miso soup, breakfast, I mean, you know, I mean, obviously rice.
Yeah.
Like, it was just very interesting to see what, like, I think it had never, and it's so hard to know too, because like, it seemed like a hotel that maybe catered to like, groups of tourists from the world over, not just from America in particular. So like it was hard to know at what points in time you were experiencing like Japanese culture or what points in time you were just experiencing like what the hotel thought people visiting wanted.
Right.
And so, yeah, so it was like, you know, it was very interesting that like you would go at night and you'd see all these foods and you're sort of like, oh yeah, okay. Like, you know, it's dinner. And you come in the morning and like, they were all still there. And it was like, okay.
Interesting.
Okay. So maybe like what we consider like breakfast food is radically different from like what is considered to be breakfast food.
Yeah, like in Japan.
But it's hard to corroborate that because we have such a limited experience.
Yes, yes, yeah. I know. Well, I mean, we could probably look it up, but we have not.
Not yet.
Nope. But so we got there. So we had dinner the first night though, and we're trying to like take it in, like what you know, what should we do? And this was going to be our first introduction to the like the incredible pride that is that in Japanese culture that people have with their job.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it definitely was very apparent that like providing exceptional service is something that they are like determined to do. And it was across the board, whether it was like the, you know, the like attendees on like the airplane on like the way out there or back, like people at restaurants, people that you like, you know, I think there was like one moment we're trying to figure out if we're standing in the right place for an Uber and somebody like bike pedaled past us. So this wasn't even like an employee situation. This was just the generosity of spirit of the people there. But she like pulled over on her bike just to see if she could help us figure out where to go.
Oh,
you know, and it was like, well, that was really nice of you. But yeah, everybody we met like went so above and beyond when it came to making sure that you were like being tended to, being like, I don't know, cared for, making sure that you were finding everything successfully and have like, you know, having a positive experience.
Yeah. But so our waitress at the first night we were there, like we told her like, you know, where do we start? I think she could tell we were like a little maybe intimidated by like, how do we assemble some of this food together in the appropriate way.
Yes.
And I mean, it was like having like a mom there or something. She like walked through each station and was like, all right, this here, then this. And like, you know, so we'd start doing it. She'd be like, no, right. Or the beef first, then rice on top. And you'd be like, oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was very fun though. She like, showed us the way to do it. And then you're just like, oh, now I know what's up. I know what I'm doing.
Right. And I mean, but this was like for context, it's like, this is like a buffet. So, you know, the person that is helping us is like the person who just like kind of like brought us to our seats.
Right.
You know, and it's like, it's not explicitly like she was even like the waitress who would be helping you. It's like, this was just somebody who like brought us to our table, could kind of tell we were confused, and then was like, I'm going to make sure that they figure it out.
Yeah.
And she did.
And she did. And yeah, we did. And we ate and it was good.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So that was cool. So then did we go to the next morning?
Then we go to the next morning.
Okay.
This is, so this is the reason we are here, which is Star Wars Celebration, which if you don't know, is a massive 3-day Star Wars con that happens every year at a different location somewhere on Earth.
Yeah, and I think this is the second time it's ever been in Tokyo.
Yeah.
The last time was in 2008.
So it's been a while.
It's been a while. That was the year I graduated high school. So yeah, it's wow. Like, for me to imagine in 2008 having gone to Tokyo to do Star Wars Celebration, like, that would have been during a period of time like where Star Wars was at like a theoretical like low point potentially, like
well, I don't know, because it would have been That'd have been right about the time Revenge of the Sith came out.
But the prequels were not being like met with a whole lot of enthusiasm back then.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I feel like, but like when the movies were coming out, it's like it didn't stop anyone from seeing them.
It certainly didn't stop people from seeing them.
You know.
That's a very good point. It's a very good point.
Like, I don't think, yeah, like.
When did Revenge of the Sith come out?
It was, when indeed? Because I think the first one came out in like 2001, 2000, 2001, somewhere around there. The Phantom Menace?
2005.
Okay. Yeah. So this has been like 3 years after the most recent Star Wars movie had come out in 2008 then.
Right. Yeah. But by comparison, try to imagine, like, it's not going to be till 2015 when The Force Awakens comes out.
Yeah.
So it's like, you would be 3 years after the last reason anybody would have had for, like, major, major hype.
Right.
Like, and had Disney even purchased, when did Disney purchase Star Wars?
I don't know. Like, yeah, it's Clone Wars coming out by now.
I bet so. I mean, and not to say that people have ever had like low enthusiasm towards Star Wars at all. Like, I mean, it's 2012 is when Disney bought Star Wars. But like, it definitely seems like it would have been in like in a different era where in 2025, by comparison, it's like there's this new streaming show coming out, this new streaming show coming out. There's this new animated show coming out. There is like these movies that are on the horizon, these major celebrities that are attached to the project.
Yes. Like, Star Wars is officially like a never ending story at this point. Yes. Like, you know, we will not live to see the end of Star Wars.
Right.
Right.
Right. So yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot to imagine kind of going on, but it's really cool because like as soon as you step into the environment, you can see in just absolutely every direction the sheer enthusiasm for this fandom. Like whether yes. it's the like the different kinds of vendors, the way that people are shopping, the way that people are dressed. I mean, just the massive number of people that like made the pilgrimage to Japan
yeah.
for the experience. Like
it was absolutely wild because the attendance on this event, I want to say was like 110,000 or something.
Is that right? Okay. Or that I wasn't was sure.
Like tickets sold. So maybe like over the course of 3 days or something.
Okay.
And we weren't there on the first day. That was the Friday when we arrived. So sadly we had to miss the first day, but we were there for the Saturday. And it was certainly packed.
Yes.
What was interesting was that like the next day, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, we went to Disneyland Tokyo. But when you're walking around the convention center, I would say that it was, I don't know, probably like 70%
Americans
or at least people who had traveled to be there. But then, compared to the next day we went to Disneyland where it was like 99% Japanese like people.
Yes.
Who were just from Japan going to Disneyland on that day.
Right.
So it was impressive how many people traveled to be there for this specific event. But so we wake up, we arrive down at the lobby and we meet up with our group, which is like a small group of creators who've all come out for the same reason, which is to go to the Meta Quest booth, which is like the Meta VR.
Yes.
Yeah. Headset experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're trying out their two new experiences, which hold on. We're Star Wars Beyond Victory and Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge.
Yes.
And then you also tried out one of their like running ones, which is called Vader Immortal.
Yes.
Which is a game I actually own on my Oculus and have already played through.
Right.
But you tried that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it was really crazy because like that was who brought us out there was MetaQuest. And so like, I think when we got the original email, it was kind of like, wait, is this real? Is this happening? You know? And then like when you get there, you come to find out they have like one of the two largest booths at the entire event. So this is like a huge deal. There's a 3 hour wait to go through and have the experience that we were there to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it felt really cool to be like, kind of like affiliated and be able to like, you know, sort of like walk in and have like a booth sort of like partitioned aside for us to get to do the experience. And before we got to do it, we actually got to sit down with the game, like showrunner and the producer for it. So like the people who were sort of like the masterminds, we got to like chat with them for a half hour.
Yeah. About, just like, you know, asking like, you know, what's it like making a VR game and working with Star Wars and like, you know, what's it like developing canon inside of a, you know, a universe like Star Wars, because part of one of the games is like a big pod racing story in Beyond Victory, where your character is the apprentice of Sebulba from The Phantom Menace.
He's kind of like the villainous character that like Anakin is up against, who's kind of like playing like a little aggressive.
Yeah.
But it seems like this is like maybe a slightly more softened version of Sebulba that's like 20 years after, you know, what is it? Bunta.
Yeah. The Race of Bunta Eve.
The Race of Bunta Eve. Yeah. Yeah. So, and he's got like his apprentice and everything, but they were explaining to us that like the whole premise behind the game was it's like, if you could imagine when you were a kid, like playing with your Star Wars action figures, it's like you might set up this kind of like interaction. Like it's almost like you've got like your coffee table, your dining room table or whatever, like in front of you. You've kind of set up like whatever little story that you've come up with for your characters to do. And then you're doing it. But obviously your action figures don't come to life. And so like, there, it's like you put the helmet on and it's kind of doing the thing I can most compare it to is like, I remember when the Apple headset came out and it has like that, you're not seeing through the lens, but like cameras are projecting the room around you, like for your eyes. So you can see like piece of the room, but then right in front of you is this square that you can like take your hands and like you reach forward, they like look like gloved hands, and you can like grab the corners of the table and resize it and shape it and move it to wherever you want it to be. And you can see the little characters like walking around, little pod racers. And then like you get into the game and like the cutscenes are like these beautiful cutscenes, like where you go in and you're like in Sebulba's garage with like his mechanic, and you know, they're all like walking around you like at full human height. And you're just like this, it was crazy. Like, I was like, okay, I completely get it. Like, not only do you get the perspective of playing with all your toys like we did as kids, but also you were getting to then like be dropped into that world and see it through like a first person lens.
Yeah. And that was really cool. The pod racing was like a pretty fun little game to do as well. And then you did Vader Immortal, which is like, I've played through that one myself, and it's like, it's so funny, like, because when you're like a fan of something and you watch the movies and you see Vader and you play with the toys and you get pretty just used to the character as like a character on the screen in front of you, and it's like, you don't think of Darth Vader as being like that scary, you know.
Right.
He's just some character, like he's a bad guy, and like, you know, to
it's
the
like,
other
it's like cool when Darth Vader shows up.
It's like, it's cool when Darth Vader shows up until you're in the VR game and suddenly Darth Vader is walking towards you and you realize that Darth Vader is like 7 feet tall, like, because he's just a giant robot, and suddenly you're like, oh my, like, ho, it's bad news, it's bad, it's Dude, bad.
I am convinced that the horror genre in particular is gonna take on whole new heights through the VR experience.
There's no doubt about that.
Because I mean, I can't even describe how intimidating it was. Like, I mean, it was like having this like extremely menacing person walking at you, and like, and not in a way where you're just sort of like, well, maybe he's not walking at me. It's like, no, he's walking at you.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, you, the character of the game, are staring up at Darth Vader, and he's not happy about it. Yeah.
Yes. So super neat. Like, I think it gave me like a whole new appreciation for where we currently are with this like VR technology and like what to, you know, like what to expect as we kind of like draw ever nearer to that like Ready Player One experience.
Talk to the guys who made the game. They're like, it's not as far off as you think.
Yes. Yeah. You know, so it, like, even that was kind of fascinating, because so, you know, you've got these two people who are, you know, involved with ILM and Lucasfilms and, you know, like all of the names in what it means to make, you know, Star Wars content. And they were like, a huge part of our job is to just go out and test and explore the new technology that is like available. So even if it's not what we're fully seeing packaged into the modern day, it sounds like stuff that exists out there I think the VR world is going to be one to keep a very close eye on.
Oh, I know.
It seems like there's going to be a lot.
It does feel like at some point, like, right, you can play VR right now and it's like, it's fun and cool and immersive. And I think the people who've discovered it, like, love it. But like at some point, there's going to be a tipping point where it like, I feel like it's going to like really like go from being like a thing that some people knew about to a thing that everyone does. TikTok was around in like 2015, you know.
Sure.
And like, it was like,
I but remember it, you going on vacation and having like a Beth's much younger cousin was like really into it, and you were like, oh yeah, she was showing us like all the dance videos and
yeah,
you know, like all the things she was into. But like, we didn't adopt TikTok for like another 6 years.
Yeah, but then like as soon as like the pandemic hit, it was like, okay, everyone's on their phone all of a sudden, and all of a sudden everyone discovered TikTok, and like as a result, like short form content just took off and never stopped.
Yes,
you know, like the pandemic is over, but TikTok and Reels and Shorts and whatever are here to stay.
Well, and case in point is even like while we're on these trips, a lot of times the other people who are being invited are people who do short form content.
That's true.
And so like you go and you sit down and you talk to all these people, and like kind of the go-to thing to do oftentimes is like, so how'd you get your start? Like, what's your origin story? Like, tell us your, like, how did you end up in this wacky world that we're in right now? And so many of them have only, like, they're still kind of finding their footing because they've been doing it for somewhere in the proximity of 4 to 5 years now, mm-hmm. since essentially like blowing up during the pandemic. So like, I mean, it definitely brought like whole new opportunities to a whole new mess of people who are kind of entering into this content creating world.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely did. Did you have any, so like what else, what else about the VR?
Yeah, I mean, it's I was very impressed with the interface. So for example, like when you play Vader Immortal, like there's this moment where Vader comes out and he hands you like a cube. And, you know, so like in the game, you reach forward, you know, in real life, you're holding like the little like Joy-Con type situations in your hand. I probably shouldn't compare them to Joy-Cons as it's a completely different platform.
But, yeah.
But you have like these joysticks in your hands, and like, so you can like reach forward and like hold it, and then you like turn your hand up so that like the cube is facing up, and you take your other hand, and it does make like a point for you, but like you literally like push in like a nodule that like, you know, for the purposes of the game is like solving Vader's puzzle to see if you're worthy of being taught.
Right.
And it's just like, I mean, it's crazy. Like, I mean, you know, I spent like 15 minutes doing it, and like the kind of like, this is why I keep thinking about Ready Player One with it, because like, you know, it seems like in Ready Player One, if you've never read it, they live in like a virtual reality world for all intents and purposes, because like the world's on fire and, you know, all this stuff is happening. So it's like, why live out there when you can live in here? And it almost seems like there's this back to reality moment that happens, like when you lift the headset and you're like, oh man, okay. Ooh. I'm back in like the real world.
Yeah.
Like as if you just actually transported yourself from one place to another.
Right.
And that was under such a short amount of time.
Yeah. You were only in there for like 15 minutes.
Yeah. And yeah. I was like, that's impressive.
Yeah.
To me. So yeah, I was like, I'm pretty eager to go and spend more time trying to get better at it, because then even in the Beyond Victory, which is the new game that they have coming out, it's like pod racing, and I definitely think it's going to be like one of those games that has like a high skill slope where anybody could probably walk in to the tutorial, figure out how to like boost a la Mario Kart,
right,
you know, yeah, whatever, and you know, turn, shift, whatever, play the game. Like I can see anybody just being able to pick it up quickly, but I have a feeling as the octane increases and as you get out of tutorial mode, it's going to be like, there's going to be like some actual finesse.
Right. Yeah. To like doing it right.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't even know if we were playing like a fully complete version of the game, because it seemed like there was a bunch of like power up things that like you could collect, but like you couldn't quite do anything with yet.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I think obviously once they release it out there, that will all be in play too.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's even like one of those things though, that like, I'd be kind of eager to do like a play along or something, or like a playthrough, so that like somebody could like see what this experience is like. Cause it's like, it really is like one of those things like where I took it off and I was like, I cannot wait for Alice to try this. Like,
yeah.
Like, cause I was like, I think it'll be fun to share it with people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, VR, it's so fun. Like, I mean, I have like an Oculus, but most of what I do is the Beat Sabers, and usually just like in 20 minute sprints before, you know, my kids are like, what are you doing? Can I, Can I play? I want to do the headset. I want to do the headset.
Can I play?
Yeah. I'm going to do the headset. And I'd be like, no, I'm playing. Go away.
Go away.
No, but then they want to do it and they got to do their things and stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, whatever. It's fine. But anyway, so moving past that, though, the rest of the event.
The rest of the event. Yeah. Yes. So we kind of finished up with that. And the, you know, the folks that we were there with were kind of like, well, go enjoy the show. Go take it in. Go look at panels. Explore the booths. Do those types of things. So we did. And I would say that the quick highlights for me were like, at one point in time, we're like walking through like the central forum area where like the major panels are taking place. And it's sort of like, and now introducing Diego Luna and, Alan Tudyk. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, so like Cassian Andor and K2SO just like walk out, you know, when you're like, I am looking at them.
Yeah.
Like they are right there.
They're right there.
You know? And it was nuts.
Yeah.
Like very cool. Very, very cool to see them in real life. Like, wow, you are real people. You are actual humans.
Yes. I mean, it was super cool to see them. And they, of course, you know, Andor, I think as of the time this podcast has come out, the first three episodes will be live on Disney Plus. So like they are there like promoting, you know, their new show coming out in like 3 days.
Right.
So that was really cool. Like they were part of the next Star Wars thing that you were going to experience. And I wouldn't say like, I don't know if they had anything particularly groundbreaking to say, but it was fun hearing little stories from set or like little moments where they're like, oh yeah, if you're watching Rogue One, you can see, you know, Diego's actually laughing in the scene. He's trying to cover his mouth, but if you look, he is.
Right, right. Yeah. Yes. They were even like, it's really funny because like the movie came out and he was like, I went to like pause it to see. And he's like, sure enough, you can see, like, I'm supposed to be, like, scowling, and I am laughing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, that's so funny.
Well, he's just such, like, a happy-go-lucky person in real life, but then Cassian Andor is just this, like, horribly depressed, serious person.
Very intense. Yeah, very intense.
Yeah. And, he was very opposite from his real-life persona. But the thing, Alan Tudyk was also really cool, because he's just, like, the Disney Easter egg of all Easter eggs, and he's been the voice of so many different things, and you're like, oh, my gosh, there you are. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
How many times have I talked about you on Super Carlin Brothers? You
know? Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's like any new Disney movie. It's like, oh, and Alan Tudyk showed up as Hey, or like the Duke of Wesselton, or the Duke Weaselton, or
the Toucan in Encanto.
Yeah. So it's, and if you've never seen it before, there's a really funny video when Alan Tudyk is doing all the clucking for Hey in Moana, and he's like doing it, and then he looks at the camera and he's like, I went to Juilliard.
Yes. He's like, look what I'm doing. Look at, are you proud of me, Mom? Like,
yeah. I'm clucking.
I'm a chicken.
Yeah. So that was really cool. Then of course, Jay and I got so had by the Star Wars Celebrations, like exclusive event only pins.
Oh, of course we did, Ben.
I mean, goodness gracious, if there was something that we were going to hook, line, and sinker on more than this particular thing, I don't know what it is.
Well, we got lured in just the like the weirdest path, or like a, so because the meta booth, which we were brought to first, was right next to like one of the exclusive pin booths. So like the event had exclusive pins you can only get there, and they were scattered around at different booths or whatever.
Yeah. Which, and they would have like big signs letting you know like which booth they are.
Which booth, go to these booths to get the different pins or whatever. And you know, we're like, okay, well, obviously we love pins. We don't have like a specific mission. Like, we were told about the event too late to have signed up for any like autographs or meet and greets or anything like that.
Right.
So we couldn't really do that sort of thing. And we didn't have like cosplays or anything. So we're like, okay, so this will be like our mission. We'll try and get the pins. That'll be a fun little thing to go do. And we'll see the whole event doing that, you know?
Right.
And the first one we happen to be at, has a pin of Fennec Shand from The Mandalorian and Boba Fett.
Yep.
It's playing by Ming-Na Wen. And you can just walk up to the booth and we're like, can we get the pin? They're like, oh yeah, here. It's just, you know, boom, it's like whatever, 600 yen or whatever. And we're like, great, cool.
Right.
Thanks. And we got our pin. And we were like, well, that was easy. So we'll just go to all the other booths and just buy the pins from them.
Right.
And that'll be that. But no, that was the only booth where it was easy.
Yes.
And it was the first one we walked up to.
So like that was the thing. Yeah. So then it was like, then we had like the taster. Then we had successfully gotten one that has like the little badge that says like, you know, Star Wars Celebration exclusive or whatever. Good.
Like, we did it.
And then cool. Citizen Watches is like two booths over, and like we walk up and we're like, oh yeah, can we buy the like
the Kylo Ren pin? Yeah, Kylo Ren, a little bit cooler character than Fennec Shand. You know?
And, yeah, and they're like, no, you have to buy a watch, and we're like, oh. Okay, so if you buy a watch, then you can get one of the pins, and it's like, okay,
plot twist.
So they had some watches that were quite expensive, and some watches that were quite less expensive.
Yes.
And so we bought a couple of quite less expensive watches.
One of which I'm wearing.
Yeah, you are. Look at that. Yes. It looks great.
It does.
And then we got those pins. Then we walk over to like Topps, and Topps is like a company that is like super famous for anything from like baseball cards to other collectibles and stuff like that.
Is that the Darth Maul pin?
That Darth Maul pin, and that was one that was like, okay, well, we want to get the Darth Maul pin.
Pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we're like walking around, and we see like a line like wrapped around like the entire booth, which is pretty, the booth itself is pretty huge. And we're just trying to figure out like where to go. And we're like, what is this the line for? And they're like, this is the line to get your time slot to come back to wait in a different line so that you can go and buy this thing and then also get the Darth Maul pin.
Yes.
And it was like, whoa. Okay. This is crazy. Like
people are, that line was already so long.
It was. We didn't do that one.
So we didn't do that one. We were like, okay, you know what? We're gonna pass on the Darth Maul pin.
Yeah, we're gonna have to. But I was pretty determined to get the BB-8 pin.
You were. Yep.
That was one that I was kind of like, okay. So sure enough, same thing. So we get there, and I don't even know what these little things are called, but they like if you can imagine like a little. Like just like a little Mr. Game & Watch maybe from like, well, I was going to say from Smash Brothers, but Game & Watch probably comes from something before Smash Brothers.
From Game & Watch. Yeah.
So he's like a little like animated guy, and they have like Yoda with like two dot eyes and like a smile and then
like a ditto.
And then these like little legs and arms coming off of him in like a little like crouched sit position.
Just like a little derpy Yoda.
And you had to buy the whole set of these little action figures to get the BB-8 pin. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want these, but I want the pin.
Yeah.
So,
well, we had gotten this for the backstory on that too. We'd gotten through the whole day and like Ben had not bought any merch for himself. Like,
true,
very much at all. And it was like, Ben, you want the pin, just get the things.
Yeah.
You got to get something.
So I did.
So we did. Yeah. We got that BB-8 pin.
We did.
Yep. And then as we were walking around, it became clear that despite the Fennec Shand being one you could just walk up and purchase, that was not going to be the case for any of the other ones. You were going to have to like spend money or sign up for a thing or whatever. So I think we ended up with like... The Fennec Shand, the BB-8, the Mace Windu, and the
Kylo Ren.
Yes. Yeah. And then there was one booth that what he was doing was buying the pins from people who had gone to the booths, not to get the pin, but to just interact with the booth,
yes.
But had ended up with the pin. And then you could take them to this guy and he would buy them from you and then resell them to other people who did just want the pin, but didn't want to do the other thing.
Right.
So he had one of the Darth Vader pins, and that, like the Darth Vader pin was bigger than the other pins, as you might expect.
A little
being
bit
Vader.
Of a chase. Yeah.
That was definitely like a chase one. And I was like, I don't know if it was that hard to get the Darth Maul one, whatever you're going to have to do to get the Darth Vader one is going to be stupid.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to buy this one from this guy at whatever right now.
Yes.
So we got the Darth Vader one. And then the goal was sort of like, okay, well, maybe the other booths, I'll just start looking for like Darth Vader pins. So that's what we also started to do.
Yes. Yeah. So what else happened while we were, I'm trying to think of everything because it feels like there was just like a million different.
We went into the there was another giant booth, or it was almost like just like a pop-up store. It was like Hot Toys. And that was another one where it was like, you go to the entrance and then you're like, oh no, of course you have to stand in line to get in just inside the booth.
Right.
Yes. And then you like look and it's like a little, there's a queue off to the side, but if you go to try and get in the queue, it's like, this is not, there's someone holding a sign that says, this is not the end of the line. And you're like, where's the end of the line? And he'll point over there and you go over there and there's someone holding a sign that says, this is not the end of the line. And you say, where's the line? And they point you to, and it's just like, you got to wait in like three different queues and they're like halting traffic so they can walk the line through in different sections. And it's like, it's a 40-minute wait to get in this store. And you're like, We're getting in that store.
I need to.
Yeah, but it worked out pretty good because I waited in most of the line, and then Ben just jumped in at the end and got in with me.
Yeah,
it was pretty good.
Nobody shouted at me.
No one shouted at you. But in the meantime, Jon Favreau walked by, and I was like, what? That was really cool.
That is really true. Yeah, so director, creator of Mandalorian?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Jon Favreau. You've heard of him.
Yeah, yeah. He's come up. He also did Iron Man.
He plays, you know, Happy.
And Elf.
He did Elf.
Yeah.
And Chef. You should see Chef. Chef's a really good movie.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, Jungle Book.
We were bouncing around with so many things.
Lion King.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. He's done some stuff. Big fan.
Yeah. That would have been a really, really good one to meet. Yeah. So just a myriad of different crazy things. Like, I mean, just going into, and I'm sure anybody who's been to like Comic Cons or like some of these kinds of events, they're like, yeah. You guys are all speaking like par for the course. Like this is like what to expect. But like, I didn't know how to expect any of this. You know, it's like, I go back to like my aquarium conference days, which in my mind were huge. Like, you know, they felt like massive events with so much going on. And it's like, no, this is a whole different animal.
This is a horse of a different color.
Yes. Yes, it really is. So really cool Star Wars experience. That was just absolutely amazing. Super fun. Made me just like so excited for like more Star Wars stuff.
Oh,
so.
I know. It's like you leave and you're just like, I can't wait to go home and watch Andor. And I'm going to put on my VR headset again. And I'm going to do some more things. And, you're in such a good like Star Wars place. And it was like, what was crazy too is we got like a lot of people recognized us from like Super Carlin Brothers.
Yes, that was really wild. Like, I mean, it was really like, especially, I think it even was very like heartwarming as well. Because like, you're there and you're looking at like, I mean, like, celebrities, you know, like, I mean, and I mean, and even the people that like weren't famous because they're like in the Star Wars, you know, you've got like I saw like other like content creators that like I've noticed before who are like deeply in the space. You've got like all the cosplayers who like any of which are worth going and taking a photo with because they're all incredible.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
We so much like craftsmanship has gone into it.
We saw someone who had done like a, C-3PO from the Phantom Menace, like before he's got any of the like gold plating on.
Yeah,
like walking around, that guy was insane. He was so good. There was someone dressed as there were so many people dressed as so many things. I got to pick. There was someone dressed as like Neil from Skeleton Crew.
Yep, that was a great one.
Literally walked right off set. I mean, it was so good. It was so good. But so many people were so good. Like the talent level of the cosplayers is just through the roof.
It's that it really goes to show to you, like, I mean, at least to me, is that like the like there are the people who make the costumes for movies, and then there are people who probably could or should be hired by companies to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they are as I guess I haven't seen them ever like side by side, but they seem as good.
Yeah.
Some of them are like so amazingly executed.
Right.
So that's like, but then, you know, people walk up to us and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm meeting you. And you're like, really?
Well, thank you.
That means a lot.
Yeah.
That you know, and it really does. I mean, it was really, really cool and so fun that, especially being on the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
You know, that there are these people who know who you are.
Yeah. Like. So shout out to everyone if you saw us. Thank you.
Yes.
And shout out just a little Curtles. Thank you for listening to our show. And you know, it's awesome.
I know. It really is awesome. Yeah. There is something like really like extra special indeed about people who tune into the pop, because I feel like the value proposition, I guess, when it really comes down to it, is us and our lives.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so it's like the fact that you guys are willing and want to be a part of this and tune in. It's like, it means that you're invested in who we are as people, which is, you know, it just means a lot. It definitely, I mean, there's a vulnerability to this show in particular.
For sure. You know, it feels like putting yourself out there a lot, but hopefully sharing like shared experiences that people can relate to, and they can, you know, feel like they have, you know, are part of the conversation.
Exactly.
Well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
All right. So let's see. Anything else we should mention about Star Wars Celebration? But you hemmed and hawed over a shirt for quite some time.
Goodness gracious. Yeah. I did. Oh man. And you know, and I'm like, I'm partially regretting not getting it too, because
so no,
I know. I mean, so like you're walking around and it's like, and again, like I can go back to like my aquarium days. And like, I know sometimes like the stuff at conferences can be like a bit, you know, like marked up because for one, people had to get their stuff there. They had to pay for the booth. There's a lot of expenses associated. Like I totally get it. You know, it's like you're not necessarily going to a collector's booth at a con without knowing that there could be like an attached premium to the fact that this person got all the stuff there.
Right.
So no, you know, like I'm not upset by the cost or anything like that, but there was an unusual problem that we were running into, which was that like you're in this amazing space. And like, if there was ever a time where going into it, I was like, I want the shirt that is just like the, like I was there.
The I was there shirt.
The, you know, like just the thing that says Star Wars Celebration Tokyo. Like,
right.
You know, that was like the thing I wanted. And to the best of my knowledge, I suppose our knowledge is that like there wasn't a booth at the event that sold event merch.
Or if there was, it got sold out on day one.
And yeah, and so you couldn't get to it because people everywhere were walking around in it.
Yes.
And so like when we're talking, we're like, you know, where did you get that? They were like, oh well, I ordered it when I bought my tickets.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like this is the kind of thing that you order like when you're checking out, like I want 2 3-day passes to the event and a t-shirt and a tote bag and a hat.
Right.
You know, it's like that was when you bought it. And so we couldn't get any of those things to the best of our knowledge again. So then we're walking through all the booths and there's this guy there who has like all the action figures from way back in the day, from our childhood, from before our childhood, you know, like lunchboxes and posters and, you know, signed things and random bits of memorabilia from,
right,
you know, Happy Meal toys or whatever, like anything you can think of. But one of the things that they happened to have was one of the event shirts new in the bag from the Star Wars Celebrations event that took place in 2008 in Tokyo. Yeah. And so it's this really beautiful shirt that was like, had this like really cool red design. It's got like the Japanese flag sort of like incorporated into this, like, you know, very Star Wars looking like symbol.
Yeah.
And it was the exact kind of shirt that I would buy.
Right.
It's very simple in design, but like speaks to what it was and has like some cool artist interpretation going on and everything. So I walk in and I'm like, gosh, well, I wonder if it's a medium. And it's like, it is a medium. And it's like, okay, all right. Well, like, you know, you're trying to do like the mental conversion in your head because like the number of yen that it cost is so high that it's kind of like, okay, like this is even in US dollars, this is going to be kind of expensive. So I sort of set it down. And I was like, let me think about it. I'll keep walking around the floor, see if I find anything else, see if I come back and am able to justify purchasing it. And you know, so I'm walking around, I'm not able to find anything else that's like really tickling my fancy, so to speak, and you know, like the thing. And I'm like, Jay, I want to go back. Let me see if the shirt's still there. And you were being so supportive and you were like, heck yeah, let's go. So we walk back over and in my head, I'm like, if it's like $100, like I will spend $100 on this shirt. Like, it's like, I wouldn't normally like do that, but it was like, this feels like such a once in a lifetime experience. Like, I don't know when I'll get this again. And it was crazy because like we walked back and I'm like, you know, sort of like poke my head around. At this point in time, it's like, we've been gone for a while. There's tens of thousands of people walking around.
Right.
And then I'm like,
certain someone would have bought it.
You're certain somebody would have bought it. And then I'm like looking and I'm like, you know, like now I'm like, I kind of want to go like run up and like grab it before somebody grabs it like right in front of
me. Then you're like, I'm reaching for it. And you're like, I'm sure someone's going to get it now.
Yeah. Right. So I go to pick it up and it was like 18,500 yen, which I think ended up being like $115.
Yeah, like at 100, you were okay.
I mean, somewhere
across the line.
Somewhere across the line. And I was like, I know that I'm not going to be here again. I know that this is going to be such like a difficult thing, but it was kind of like, it's in like a collector's booth, like a booth of somebody who like, that's what they're selling is like stuff that came from other places. Like this is not the manufacturer. It's not the event. It's not anything like that. And so I'm kind of like, 115 is a lot. And even though I'm looking at it, even though it's in my size, I'm like, maybe I can find one like on eBay or like Mercari or something. And like, I can still take solace in the fact that like, I did go to the event. So even though I didn't go to the 2008 event, I went to the event. So even if somebody was like, oh, wow, you've been to like, you know, Star Wars Celebration in Tokyo. I'm like, I have. Let me tell you the story. Like, so I felt like I could like find a way to be comfortable wearing this shirt. And So then, you know, I can get to the hotel that night and I'm still thinking about it and I'm taking a picture of it and I'm like doing Google lens search to like try to find them.
Yeah.
I don't even know like what to type in other than, you know, all the obvious things, all the keyword searches,
right?
Which wasn't yielding anything. And then there's like, there are a couple that have like been online, but they were selling for $115.
Oh gosh.
So it's like the price was actually appropriate.
Right.
And none of them are in stock. Anywhere.
Just anywhere.
And I was like, no. Oh my gosh. Because then it was like, you know, it was validating at the very least to know that like you weren't just being gouged by event like prices.
Event pricing. Yeah.
You know, so it was like, okay, so like it actually does cost this much money. And in most cases, then you're gonna also have to pay shipping all of a sudden. And it was just like I held it. It was in my hands.
You had it.
You know, and it's like, I don't know when will I ever find another one. So I guess I'll be on the lookout.
Yeah,
you know, maybe.
There you go.
Sometimes you get lucky.
Oh man,
yeah, such a goofy little experience. But I feel like all in all, though, absolutely amazing. Like it was so cool. The Star Wars community like is one that can be a little hostile. It's like it's one that can be kind of hard to navigate or to know like which fans are going to agree with what decisions and who feels what way about what prequels and sequels.
Yeah.
And
it's like, it's such an evolving fandom because like we've said it before that like, you know, nobody hates Star Wars as much as people who love Star Wars.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
This was fun because it was like, well, you know what? Everyone here loves Star Wars and no one came here to hate on Star Wars. I'll tell you that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was just like pure Star Wars fun the whole time you were there. And it's like, I'm so curious to see where the Star Wars fandom like goes moving forward because like it is singular in its like the time it has existed and the demographics it has targeted over like the entire existence of Star Wars. Like, you know, when it came out, it was like for, you know, teenagers of the 70s.
Yeah.
And those people loved it. And then you got to like the 90s and those kids like loved the original movies, but then the prequels came out and like in, you know, had like a whole new generation of fans. And then they started coming out with the Clone Wars and that hit like the next generation of fans who like liked that, but then also watched the movies. And then the sequels came out and that reinvigorated a whole new group. It's like there's like, and then Disney Plus has come out and they're just firing shots at every demographic in different ways. And it's like, if you're a Star Wars fan, you want to love every single thing that comes out, but every single thing that comes out isn't necessarily made for you anymore.
Right.
And it always feels like, no, it should be made for me because when I got into it, it was made for me. And like, so now, like, if you're suddenly watching like Skeleton Crew, you're like, but this doesn't feel like Star Wars anymore. This is just like a bunch of kids in a neighborhood going on a treasure hunt. Like, that's not Star Wars or whatever. And it's like, but like, it is Star Wars. Like, there's a whole lore there. There's still some Jedi involved and stuff. It's just like, you know, it wasn't like the big Skywalker saga section of things, but like, it still makes sense. And so it'll be curious to see, like, as it continues to move on, if people are just like more willing to only be into like certain sections of the fandom or just accept that the fandom is wide enough that not everything is always for you, or if you just love it even if it's not and you just like, I don't care, I like all Star Wars, period.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, you know, is that it's like it's interesting. It would be interesting to see what like a map would be like for the people who are trying to like build the Star Wars brand. You know, it's like, okay, what you're trying to do is put like little ramps out in every direction so that there's just, it's like, you know, this is a gateway for this group of people. This is a gateway for this group of people. This is going to be good for these people. This is filling the needs and wants of these people. And like, you know, everything is going to sort of like be sliding out in a million different directions. And the ultimate curiosity is whether or not like you simultaneously end up experiencing like layers of like that fear of missing out. Like I haven't, you know, it's like, I haven't seen all of Skeleton Crew yet. And so now I feel like a fake fan because like, I haven't seen all of it.
Right.
You know, or do some people just start to realize like, it's too big to see all of it.
I mean, yeah.
You know, like you're probably there's probably a huge percentage of people out there who love Star Wars. There's probably a very, very, very small percentage of people out there who have consumed all of it.
I mean, if you want to say all of it, I mean, that, like, what do you even mean? You know, like all of the things you can watch, all of the things you can read, all of the comics, all the games. Do you want to go into Legends?
That's,
you
know, what I mean. Yeah, yeah. It's like, I mean, yeah, yeah, then you crack the door on Legends and it's just like,
yeah, crack the door on Legends. Just
consuming all the canon information alone.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, they're constantly making more.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, you could probably just kind of commit fully to Star Wars and just have more than you could consume for at least a while.
Oh, for a very long time. I mean, I think I've watched everything you can watch.
Dang.
I think there might be like a few of those, like that, like anime show that came out that I think those, I don't know if those were canon, but like it has come out. I don't know if I've watched that. And there was some like Tales of the Jedi, which were like little shorts, like vignettes,
yeah,
that maybe I haven't seen. But otherwise, I think I've watched everything. But like, do I remember every episode of Clone Wars? Like, absolutely not. You know, there's 8 seasons of it. Like, I remember loving it, and I remember thinking all the stories were really fun. But like, every single episode, oh no.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I've read some of the books. We've got the Darth Vader comics. I haven't played any of the games, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting as well, I think, when I compare it to like what we do here at Super Carlin Brothers, because like, you know, it's like, I know that there are like factions of people who have like known us from like the early SCB days where like they almost migrated to here at like the Pop, because this is sort of like that, like the brotherhood aspect of what we do. It's like you're learning about like our lives, you're learning about like our thoughts and feelings and reactions and those types of things, whereas like maybe like potentially could have aged out of like the content, or you know, they don't like it like if we cover like this thing versus that thing, or you know, kind of like picking and choosing. And so I even think like it would be fascinating if like the day ever came where we had, you know, like all the different podcasts, like, you know, we've talked about like doing like Lord of the Rings or Name of the Wind, or you know, doing different gaming avenues, you know, and it's kind of like at some point in time, it's like, do we start to become like our own little Star Wars where it's like, well, you know, if you really like this kind of content from them, it's like, well, then go over here because they've got this one. And if you like this, you can go over here because they all got this.
But
it's
right.
Like, it becomes hard to consume everything we do because there's just so many, it goes in every direction.
There's so much, so much stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're basically Star Wars. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Carl, the SCB universe is just like the Star Wars universe. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We need like a wiki.
Yeah. 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 No doubt. Yeah.
The SCBU.
SCB yeah. universe. Right.
Anyway, but yeah, so that we haven't even gotten through the rest of this trip yet. And I don't think we're gonna have time to today. So we're gonna have to, we'll continue to scrape through our backlog.
We'll pick up next week with our awesome, some more stories from Japan and what we did in, Disneyland, and some crazy stories about some bonsai trees.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yeah. Some just a like an action packed trip. It's almost like every hour of the trip probably has a story we could tell from it, because it was just that much stuff happening. So, but as always, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. If you'd like to catch some more pop action from us, or if you're like, you know, I just haven't had my fill, then you can head on over to patreon.com/popcornculture. And we have After the Final Pop, which just includes the entire back catalog. It's an extra 15 to 20 minutes after each week's episode that we record, and sometimes it has to do with the main episode's conversation. Sometimes it's just like literally its own little mini episode of the Pop. So if you're ever jonesing for a bit more of that, then you can head on over there and find it there. Again, it's patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, any feedback you have for the show, popcornculturepod@gmail.com. And otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.